David Hunter, contrarian macro strategist. Welcome to The Competent Investor. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, hi, Tom. It's great to see you again.
David, I reached out to you at the end of May because looking at the stock market, thinking about all the conversations that we've had over the years, I was really feeling like that was a big part of your melt-up thesis. Now it's end of July. We're materially higher in the SPY. NASDAQ is a little bit lower, but how long do you expect this trend to continue at this point?
Yeah, I still think we're very potentially going to see the top of a 44-year, what I call 44-year secular bull market, started in August of 82. So the 44-year anniversary will be August of this year. I still think we'll see that top this year. Could be as soon as probably, I 3 months ago, I thought it could be as soon as Labor Day, but obviously we've had a couple months of consolidation, so it just stretches it out a couple months. So it's probably something in the fall. It could stretch beyond that and certainly can go into next year. I just don't think it will. Mm-hmm. If you look at monthlies, if you look at dailies, obviously it doesn't look like a parabolic, but if you look at monthlies, even with a 2 month consolidation, you can see if this thing moves up from here that we really have already started that very vertical move. Mm-hmm. People think it has to go up every day or every week. It doesn't, even in a parabolic. So, but either way, whether we're in the parabolic, we won't know till after the fact and look back. Whether we're in it or not, I think this consolidation has mostly run its course. There may be still a day or two or three left, but I don't see a lot of big downside here, less maybe 1% or less than some of the indexes. And the upside from here, my target for the S&P is 10,000. So, from 7,500, that's 33%. My upside for the NASDAQ is 36,000, so that's a bit more than that. And the Russell, same thing. It's raised that to 4,000 now, and that's probably mid-threes from here. So in the Dow, I just increased my target there in my July letter. It was the only index I increased to 70,000. It looks to me like it's got plenty of room to go up. And that'll put that right in line with the others. So I still am very bullish, still think the economy is holding together well enough. Obviously, we've had this week, a clear re-engagement with Iran, and it looks like we're going to hopefully stay the course there this time and not try to negotiate with people who don't want to negotiate. And I think that's obviously it's pushed oil up. You could see oil up, over $90 here in the next week. Mm-hmm. If this thing continues to get aggressive. But I don't see it as getting in the way of a bull market here. I don't think it's, could it go to 95? Sure. Do I think it can go beyond that? I doubt it. Mm-hmm. And it may not get that far. And so you're in the last stages of a counter trend move in oil before it rolls back over and heads towards the 60s again, in my opinion. So I think that'll all be part of when the back of the stock market if oil rolls over, inflation will roll over. If inflation rolls over, interest rates will roll over, and that'll all help the stock market. Mm-hmm.
David, what do you attribute this 44-year bull market to? Is this era of cheap money, cheap rate, or lower rates? Why is there no runway left on that? If that's the case,
yeah, it's been certainly a lot of the run has been all this big money. As I've said many times, if you just go back to 2008, the Fed balance sheet was $875 billion. Today, in the pandemic, it got up to $9 trillion. Today, it's probably 6.7, a little higher than that, 6.7 trillion. So sure, you print money and just a lot of that's going into capital markets. Mm-hmm. So that's a big part of it. It's also the rat going through the snake, which is what the baby boom is. You know, they were the guys that during the Vietnam War era, obviously were the protesters and were, you know, calling for societal change. As they started forming families and buying houses, they were, you know, they drove up home prices back in the 70s and 80s and, you know, furniture purchases and appliance purchases, all of that. In the mid 80s, financial industry looked out and recognized, you know, this rat is going to start moving towards accumulating financial assets for retirement because they've already bought their houses and furniture by and large. And that's exactly what happened. So they were a big part of the accumulation of financial assets that's really gone on since the 80s. You know, we've seen a lot of product created for that, you know, since they're much more in an asset accumulation stage. They created, you know, everything from options and derivatives off of bonds, and they also created the ETFs, obviously, in more recent years. And so there's been plenty of financial engineering going on and plenty of financial product out there for them to buy. In the meantime, the companies did a lot in terms of figuring out, hey, we can buy back stock and reduce float and get prices going up. And we've seen a lot of companies basically reduce their float so much that we have, and buyouts, et cetera, that we have less supply of equities out there. So it's all of that that I think has helped drive prices higher. I believe we're heading towards a point where, well, first of all, the Fed has openly said, first Powell and now Warsh, openly said they have no desire to go back to QE infinity zero interest rate policy. They realize that's a mistake. Warsh in particular has stated that that's a mistake, and has stated that inflation is, you know, fighting inflation is his number one goal. So if you take him at his word, obviously they want to, he wants to shrink the balance sheet. He doesn't want to expand it. So all of that says that as long as he has some room to maneuver, you're not going to see a lot of new money created. I believe that we're coming to an end of a cycle, and a cycle that's, you know, very leveraged, that we could have something worse than 2008-09, and that it'll force his hand, and we will get a lot of money again that will ramp up the next cycle. But between now and then, I think it actually will be the Fed trying to rein it in a little bit that could help contribute to that coming bust. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and for a stock market, there's enough liquidity to get us from here to 10,000 on the S&P, in my opinion. And that's, you know, that's 30, you know, between 30 and 35% away, in my opinion. That's, you know, in normal times, 2 or 3 years worth of returns. We might get it in 3 or 4 or 5 months. So it sounds like it's almost here, but in terms of how much, you know, liquidity gets eaten up in that, it's going to be most of, you know, there's plenty to get us there, but there's not a lot, I think, to move us beyond that. You know, if we get that overheated, you can bet that the Fed's going to feel, you know, we got to pull back on the reins here. You know, in my opinion, we're just getting to that point, and what really turns a recession, which there are numbers out there that are starting to indicate we're late in the cycle, and that, you know, we're seeing delinquencies on consumer loans and credit cards, et cetera. All those things say we're getting late in the cycle, not there yet, but that you know, the Fed would normally be saying, hey, we got to lean against that maybe. You know, the consumer's in trouble, but it's too early for them to do that when they're so focused on saying, hey, we've got to get money out of the system, not in it. So I think all that combined says you first get maybe a Fed mistake or a Fed leaning against the economy, and because of leverage, it turns out to be something far worse than they meant to create. And then, and of course, it's global, so it's not just the Fed. And then, you know, at some point down the road, they'll be forced in because money's really the only thing it can turn. If you're getting a free-falling financial system, as I expect, you know, you can't take your time. It needs to be something that you get into the system quick, which is liquidity, mm-hmm. which is money. So they will be, their hand will be forced, even if they, if you ask them today, if you ask Kevin Warsh today, he'd say, there's not a chance I'm going to do that. You know, we learned our lesson. We're not going to do that. However, when you're faced with a free-falling financial system, which is what I'm saying could happen next year, all central bankers are going to be forced to put money in at a rate they would never want to do.
I was going to ask, David, you know, you're saying that these basically 2 to 3 years worth of returns can come in the next 2 to 3 months and that the liquidity is already there. What do you think the catalyst becomes to push that liquidity into the system?
Yeah, I just want to be clear. It could be 2 to 3 months. It could also be, you know, 4, 5, or 6 yeah. months. So I'm not saying it has to happen that quickly. But and what was the question?
Well, basically this 2 to 3 year, let's say, average return to get us 30% higher, 33% higher. And you said that the liquidity is already, you know, in the system for that. But, you know, I guess inherent in that, it seems like it's sitting on the sidelines. What do you think pushes it into the system to get
us? Good question. Yeah, I think more than anything else, it'll be momentum of the tape.
Okay.
It's just amazing to see, you know, you'll hear strategists and analysts and portfolio managers talk about the fundamentals that are why they're doing something or the rationale for why the market's going to move up or they think the market's going higher or their stocks are going higher. But in the end, psychology really is the thing that drives the markets. And so they will rationalize where they might be in a consolidation now and say, well, I'm worried about a rollover in, you know, in the semis or, you know, AI looks like, you know, they're demanding so much capital, we're not going to be able to supply that kind of capital. They'll have some bearish narrative right now, or at least cautious narrative. As the tape moves up, you watch that narrative change, and it will change to we're still early in the AI expansion. Semis, it'll be 2 or 3 years before they get capacity to meet the demand. So earnings are going to be very strong for at least the next couple of years. Those things will help drive it. But if you step back and look, as always seems to be the case, it's the psychology or the what I call the momentum of the tape that kind of causes that narrative to shift. So they, you know, they can't be left behind. You know, as institutions, they have to perform, and they can hold, they can be dogmatic about a view for just so long, and then they, you know, both they have to get on board, or they're going to be left in, you know, left behind and get fired, or they just their own emotions get pulled into it because the tape, it's just amazing to watch. You know, I've been a contrarian for 53 years in this business, and it just is uncanny how much emotions from both retail and professional investors drives what happens in the markets.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, when we're discussing the idea of Warsh being having inflation as his biggest target within his crosshairs, does that obviously come at the expense of the average consumer? And why is that suddenly politically viable?
Yeah, I mean, I think his view of wanting to get the balance sheet normalized, so, it, you know, where it was, I don't know what he'd call normal, but certainly it's not $6 or $7 trillion. It's probably, you know, $2, $3, $4 trillion anyway. He knows, he's smart enough to know he can't do that all at once. And he's even smart enough to know that it may not be the right time yet. He's got to pick his spots to do that. That's kind of a long-term goal. So I don't think you're going to see a shrinking of balance sheet right here. There's enough cross currents here to keep him from doing that. Mm-hmm. He's also been pretty clear that he's more of a monetarist, and he's more of a supply side believer that, he doesn't, he's not part of this Phillips curve crowd that thinks, you know, if inflation, if the economy moves up, it's going to lead to higher, it has to lead to tightening, it has to lead to, because it's inflationary. He believes that if you grow the economy, you can reduce deficits. If you grow the economy, you can have growth, particularly in a period with so much productivity growth. You can have a period where you can have growth without inflation. The growth doesn't instantly translate into inflation or mean that you have to have, you know, rising inflation. So I think he believes he can bring down rates gradually at the same time that the economy grows, that he doesn't have to wait for recession to cut rates. And so I think people may misread him. He's also, I think, his own man and is not somebody that's going to lower rates if he doesn't think it's necessary or if he doesn't think it's doable. Mm-hmm. So I think right now it's steady as she goes. Ironically, I don't think you're going to see any big change from Powell's reign to his right now. The real, and frankly, I don't think if I'm right that next year is a bust. I think both of them would be doing the same thing, which is being reluctant to ease or reluctant to print money at a time when it's demanded. So they're going to be slow, and I think that's true of the entire FOMC. They're going to be slow to recognize that we do have to go back to what we did in 2008-9 or what we did in 2020. They're going to be lagging in terms of responding because of, you know, fighting the last war. But ultimately, they'll wake up and be forced to do it. Mm-hmm.
So today we're recording this on July 22nd. We're sitting at 4.65 on the 10-year. Obviously much higher than we've seen over the last decade, for sure. How do you see rates and the treasury and bond market playing into this time that, you know, yields are rising, and what is the Fed's ability to affect the long end of the curve?
Yeah, it's a great question, because I don't think, I've always said the rates are determined by the markets. You know, the Fed can control the overnight rate, and that's about it. Obviously, their jawboning and their policy moves have some short-term impacts, but ultimately, rates are going to go where the market takes them, and that'll be based on inflation, you know, economic growth, loan demand, etc. And right now, obviously, we have rates that have moved up. They got down, I think, down under on the 10-year, down under 440, and then the ceasefire stopped and we started bombing again, and oil went from $68 back up to, you know, $86 on its way to maybe 90 or above. And if you look, that's it. You don't need it doesn't take a genius to figure out the rates are up because oil is up. And rates were down because we were here. We were back here not too long ago, maybe a month, the end of June. We were at 465, or actually, I think the high water mark was 468. So I hear people today saying 10 years at new rate highs. And I go, it's broken out. And I said, it hadn't broken out yet. It may, but it hasn't yet. We may get a double top here. If oil goes to 95, we're probably going to see, rates up higher. But if oil turns over anytime between now and, 90, you may not see much more than the high we got in June. And I'm still in the camp that believes, this is probably my most contrary call right now, is that rates are going to roll over, and ultimately you're going to see a much lower 10-year and much lower rates over the next 6 months. But, the proof is in the pudding. Until this thing finishes its upswing here, can't tell. But I do still think that basically we're in the area where we're going to top on rates, and that, as soon as oil rolls back over, it'll take something in Iran to do it, I think. But if oil rolls over, bonds will move, rates will move, roll over, and bonds will move up. Mm-hmm. And I think you could see oil, if this is a counter trend move, as I think it is, you could see oil, which got down into the 67, 68 area, actually get down to the low 60s and below in the second half of this year. And that'll take, you know, rates down below 4%, the 10-year down to below 4% on its way to 3%. And if I'm right that the economy is moving towards recession, not in it yet, but moving towards it, and ultimately a global bust next year, then, you know, over the next year, you can see rates much, much lower. Mm-hmm.
So, David, obviously, you know, with what we saw out of the Iran war, this kind of highlights how oil has reacted, how important it is, obviously, to the world economy. Do you think that a supply glut because of the fragilities that the war has highlighted comes and helps us get to that $60, sub $60 oil price?
Absolutely. I mean, I know everybody's focused on inventories right now, mm-hmm. and, you know, draining of the, you know, the surplus, et cetera.
Yes,
but I do think that, yes, we're ultimately going to see in the next year to 18 months that we're in a surplus situation. That as is always the case, when you have something like going on right now, adjustments happen in markets, and in that adjustment, actually, you get the opposite. So I do think if the economy is slowing and the world economy is moving towards a global bust, you could see oil down into the low 30s at some point in the next, probably the next 12 to 18 months. And you will have a glut. I mean, we had a glut until we went to war with Iran. Mm-hmm. As soon as, and then once the strait got closed, that's when all this, you know, move up in oil happened. You open that back up, you have what's going on with some of the other countries in the Middle East starting to find other avenues, et cetera. We've obviously been drill baby drill here, and, you know, Venezuela, because of what we did there, is starting to show that they can produce more than was thought early on, you know, that they can ramp back up faster than people thought. I think all those things will, if we can get past Iran, be on the other side of this, and it'll be the opposite of conversation. It'll be, there's a glut, exactly what you say, there's a glut of oil. And then when you get down into the 30s, I think that's the time to be contrary to that, because I do think the next cycle, because of what we're going to do in terms of responding to a bust, printing money like there's no tomorrow, it's going to jumpstart recovery cycle that will be very industrial driven, oil driven, commodity driven. And you could see oil go from $30 to $500 in less than a decade. So if you do that, obviously, you know, getting in early, and I think oil will be one of the big, big performers next cycle. We always see every cycle, and, you know, this cycle was driven by tech and AI, et cetera. The next cycle is going to be an inflation-driven, industrial-driven cycle, you know, reshoring and all the demands for commodities. And we don't have the supply that's going to meet that demand. So price is going to go through the roof on commodities, which creates inflation. You're going to have a very different leadership next cycle. It's not going to be growth stocks. It's not going to be financial stocks. It's not going to be tech in general. I mean, AI will still have a place there, but and I think you're going to see oil at the top of the list, precious metals at the top of the list, you know, metals in general, copper, et cetera, and pretty much all commodities. I think it might even be a cycle where ag commodities have a very good period of time. So very different than what we've experienced for the last 20 or 30 years.
Well, I think if we, you know, if you think about the idea that the dollar will very likely be debased in that type of scenario, along with more demand for oil, I can understand how we could get to that $500 a barrel oil. But do you think that we have some type of reset in the US dollar before that happens, that you know, let's say changes that denominator, if you will.
Yeah, I'm in the camp right now where I've been calling this for a long time and it hadn't happened yet. I mean, we went from 115 on DXY down to 95 or 6, and now we've spent a year, I guess, in this counter trend move that's taken us back to 101. I think we roll over very soon. And again, Iran is part of that and oil is part of that, but I think we roll over soon. And I have a target of 82 or 83 on DXY over the course of the next year. Certainly it might be, it might happen in 8 months, 6 months, 8, 9 months, but somewhere in the next year. And then in the bust, I think not early in the bust, because early in the bust, it'll probably be part of that sell-off. But later in the bust, I think, because it is global, as is always the case in crisis, foreign investors run to the dollar. So I think you'll get one last hurrah on the dollar, could take it as high as 120 or higher. And then I think we start probably, 18 months, 2 years out, we start a decline that could take us to 50 on the dollar or maybe below. And I just because of that bust, I don't think any kind of a reset is likely in the next few years. What happens beyond that, we'll have to see. But I think policymakers are going to have their hands full. And I'm not sure they're going to be able to do anything with the dollar because they're, I like Julie Shelton a lot, and I like the whole idea of more discipline in the Fed. But if we put we put some kind of a gold based dollar out there, and limited what we could do, have the flexibility with printing. As much as I think printing has gotten us where we are, which is in big trouble, it's like doing that after all the horses are out really limits your ability, the flexibility to respond to what that all is going to lead to. So I don't think you can put discipline in during a bust when you're going to have to flood the system with liquidity.
Yeah.
Later on, you're going to have inflation, and then it becomes a question of what maneuverability do you have? If you have it, they'll do it. I just don't know if they'll have it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. David, going into, I guess we can call it going into the war here, did you think that could have signaled the top for the stock markets? And did you think that it was a big enough threat to the stock markets to kind of start that downward slide?
Yeah, I didn't. And in all honesty, I underestimated how long this would take. I think most people did, but we have the capability militarily, but for a number of reasons that we all know, it's tricky. And these guys have shown that they really, I'm just flabbergasted that they will really cut off their nose, spite their face. I mean, Trump's whole idea was to, basically turn the Middle East into a much more dynamic economic powerhouse. And with Iran coming back into the world stage, being a normalized citizen of the world again. And, he thought he could kind of take care of the rogue elements in the country, the regime, and that they see the light. And obviously they're willing to go down with the ship, and they don't really care about their people. So it's made it a lot tougher. And, we got to walk fine lines because he's not trying to punish the Iranian people. So it's taken longer and it's more complicated. And, he's got to fight things that is here at home in terms of the fatigue over war, because of what happened in Iraq and Afghanistan, people just do not want that. And even supporters of his, he's got, I think they're mostly behind him, but he's got elements within MAGA that said, oh, you told us you weren't going to do this. Well, he's not getting us into long drawn out wars. He underestimated this himself, I'm sure, but I don't think that is a risk at all that this is going to get stretched out beyond the next several months at most, and probably weeks. Mm-hmm. But I underestimated it, and it certainly has caused you know, stretching out of my scenario in the markets, but I have not wavered a bit or lost any of my conviction that we have more to go. If anything, it's been remarkable to see the resilience of the economy with this going on. You know, oil went to 120 and it didn't cheat the economy hardly at all. And the consumer, well, we talk about the have and have not consumer, and the half the economy is, or half the consumers are really just getting by. And yet, in spite of that, consumer spending continues to be reasonably robust. That's been a surprise. I think there's limits to that because they are drawing from savings, and there's limits to that. So that's part of the reason I think, you know, by the end of this year, we likely will be in recession. Mm-hmm. But if we're still gradually moving towards recession, the stock market's not going to respond very negatively to that, particularly if rates are coming down, oil's coming down. But you're kind of walking towards that point, that break point where you cross over a line between, yeah, slowing, where investors can still believe that the economy's holding together. It may be slowing, but it's not, you know, it's not serious recession. And then you cross over to a point where all of a sudden people start reducing earnings because they realize demand's starting to slow to a point that they can't maintain their earnings. And it's at that point where I think the tip over happens. And it happens before that happens. It really happens when analysts looking ahead see that as a potential. So I think, you know, that's why I think we're months away, whether it's 2 months, 4 months, you know, we're months away from that tip over point, I think.
David, because of such, or because of the importance, let's say, of war, basically, to the American economy, defense, weapons manufacturing, jet manufacturing, all of these things, do you see it as a reasonable possibility that there is more war in America's future? You know, we've seen rumblings of kind of siding with Europe against Russia at this point, setting up for a possible longer term or let's say second half of this year escalation and conflict there. Do you see that there's a possibility of that?
There's always a possibility. I really think under Trump, that it's amazing that he gets so much pushback from his own people, you know, people that follow him, that support him, because he really does not want war. I think Iran was necessary. I think he did the right thing. They're hard to deal with, and it's, you know, but we're so fatigued with war. We think, you know, a few months of this stuff is too much. You know, we should do none. Well, he can't be an isolationist. So he's doing this, but it's not with any of the past, you know, any of the past previous recent presidents where they were willing to say we're, you know, war on terror, whatever, we're going to go on with this. I think he wants this over with as soon as possible. I don't think he's going to be one that's out there to expand our military adventures in other places. He's not looking to, he said with this one, he didn't even want to replace the regime, that's up to the Iranian people. I don't think he's an empire builder. But, you know, Ukraine and Russia is a tough thing. He didn't expect that. He thought he could solve that. Both sides are really pushing it. I kind of wonder how Russia's, at some point, even though they don't like to ever admit defeat, even they have to say this is very counterproductive to what, you know, our economy is in trouble. And even Putin, I think, may find a way out of this at some point, and, you know, between now and early next year. I just don't think Trump is, I mean, you've seen him with NATO. I mean, he's not buying into NATO's kind of always looking for expansionist opportunities. The only other place where I think you'll see it is in Cuba. Mm-hmm. You know, I think he sees, because of the success with Venezuela, I think he sees an opportunity to get Cuba turned around and get China and Russia out of our hemisphere. And if he can do that, I think he wants to do that. But again, I don't think it's a long drawn out thing. It's either he's going to be able to or he's not. So I think most of our military adventures, I think, would be wound down between now and the end of the year.
So, David, going back to the idea of the melt up here, how do gold and silver participate within that? Do they get driven up higher alongside the stock market, the general equities?
I believe so. And I think we this week finally ended the consolidation. I think, as I said, too many people are kind of looking at the last several months of silver, particularly, but gold and silver that was just, down from the left to the right all the way, and forgetting what preceded it was that big run-up in November, December, and January, particularly December and January, an amazing run-up in silver, and, gold had been running up more steadily before that even. So it just got too speculative. There were way too many people, as I say, psychology drives investors, way too many people were weekends on board just because it was going up. So you got an excuse with the war, and the war has been the big story of the last, 6 months or 5 months. And I think we are finally at the point where we got gold and silver down to their good support levels. Now, I know there are always technicians and people who have lower levels that they expect, and they get very emboldened by a move that's gone on for 5+ months, and they make it sound like it's a fact that this thing can't turn here, that it's going to 50 on silver and gold to 30, 500, and that I've had many people say it's going to 4,500 on silver, and I don't see it. I don't think so. Nothing is impossible, but I think we broke an important resistance level this week, and it looks like we broke the downtrend and we're reversing. Now, that doesn't mean silver is above 60 today. Doesn't mean you can't pull back to 57 or 8 before you go higher. So it's not going to necessarily be a straight line from here, but I think we're in the bottoming area and probably have turned the corner. And I think the next run up here has the potential, particularly in silver, of being steeper than that November to January run. So if that's the case, my target on silver is 200. If you can get silver up from 55 to 200 and do it in 4 or 5 months, that's probably steeper than what we saw in gold going from 50 to 122 in 3 months. Mm-hmm. That's kind of my time horizon. I think we are going to very, very possibly see tops in gold and silver this year in conjunction with what we see in the equity markets. Not necessarily exactly timed the same, and there's no reason that it has to happen this year. It could get stretched into the first quarter, but my best guess is we'll see it in the next few months.
So you mentioned silver going to 200. What would the equivalent gold target be?
Yeah, my gold target is 7,000. From 4,000 or just below to 7,000 in gold, by gold standards, is a huge run. Mm-hmm. And I think because of a bust coming after that wherever it tops out, probably this year, that you've got a good correction coming along with the equity correction next year. Could start before the end of this year, but sometime in the next year, you could see. I said my numbers are my best guess at where we're going, so it doesn't mean they have to go there or get there and stop. But if I'm right on those targets, it would be a pretty convenient move in gold to have a 50% retracement. So a 50% move from 7,000 gets you to 3,500 that so many people have been calling for. Mm-hmm. It didn't. It just didn't happen now. It happens during the bust. And with silver, you know, from 200 to 75% correction, because it is a more volatile, more industrial metal. So wood in a bad economy get hit harder. A 75% move for that would get it down to that 50 level. So I think the mistake that often happens with technicians is they think things happen in a straight line. They have to happen now before they turn. No, you can have another leg up and then have to retest those breakout points later on. So, you know, doesn't have to happen the way I see it, but at least that's what I see.
So once we hit those tops, let's say they hit your targets there, David, and then we begin that global bust. Do you think that ends up being the, let's say, a decade, two decade long top for the metals? Or does that destruction of capital basically destroy that safe haven trade into the metals after that?
Yeah, I've said for a long time, I think the highs we reach in the equity markets this cycle could stand for decades, you know, a decade or two decades or more. So if, you know, 10,000 is a high in the S&P, we could have a big cyclical bull market coming out of the, you know, the bear market. And you know, I'm calling for potentially an 80% bear market. So if you go 10,000 down to 2,000, that, you know, you could triple or quadruple and not get back to that 10,000 by any means. And so I think the highs in the equity market are this cycle. Mm-hmm. The precious metals, and as I said, all commodities, I think their day in the sun is still ahead of them. I think their big run is even bigger run is next cycle. So if let's say a gold does go to 3,500, my long-term target, which is probably a 2032 or 33 period, yeah, who knows, it's a long ways off, but somewhere out there, is 20,000. So you could go from 3,500 to 20,000. Mm-hmm. And my long-term gold is now 1,000. I had said 500. I've raised that to 1,000. Same time period. So you could go from, you know, let's say 50 to, you know, 1,000. So big, I think, as I said, oil and the precious metals, I think, will lead the next cycle. If you did nothing else but sold at the top here and bought gold and silver after they've had big corrections in the bust, and then just sat in those and oil stocks for the next 5 to 7 years, you'd probably be in really, really good shape.
Mm-hmm. We've often heard of the idea of the Dow to gold ratio getting back to one in some of these massive type corrections, David. Do you see that as a function of, let's say, the S&P coming down and gold going up, or you know, both going down together? Is that a possibility to you? How do you see that?
I think you'll get there. I don't think you'll get there in the bust, because, you know, if you use my numbers anyway, if silver is 3,500, you know, if my 70,000 is right on the Dow and Dow corrects 80%, you know, that's probably 14,000, I think, if I do it quickly. So it's not going to get down to 3,500. But I think by sometime next cycle, if you know, you go from 80 down to 80% so 14,000 on a Dow, and you get, you know, maybe you get back to 50,000 in the first couple of years out of the bust because of all the money that's printed. Then you start heading back down, because you're going to have high inflation, high interest rates, and, you know, you might be back down to, you could be back down to 20,000 on the Dow by the time you get, you know, let's say in the early 2030s, by the time you get to 20,000 on gold. So I could see that happening in, say, 2032 or 3, where you know, your Dow index is a loser, you know, certainly it may be up from 14,000 at the bottom of the bust, but it's not up a lot, whereas gold's gone up many, many times that. So by that time, 7 or 8 years out, yeah, you could have a one-to-one, could happen. Mm-hmm.
What do you think happens to the housing market? You know, obviously we've had a great asset appreciation with much of that currency pushed into the housing market. Do you see, a commensurate type of correction in those assets as well?
Yeah, I have said I think you could see 30 to 40% downside in the bust. So and I think we've seen the highs in the market, depending on, not every region is the same. So obviously, the Atlanta, the Florida, the Dallas areas have already rolled over and rolled over pretty hard. Whereas areas like where I am in New Hampshire, you're getting people moving out of Massachusetts to move into New Hampshire. Our prices are still going up. So, but generally, I think in the country as a whole, we've probably seen the highs on the housing market. And I think you could go from the highs, down 30 to 40% in the bust. And then because of all the money printed and because interest rates will be coming out of, the bust is going to be deflationary, in my opinion. So you're actually going to have possibly a 0% 10-year at the bottom of the bust. That means you could have a 2.5%, 2 or 2.5% mortgage rate. And for those that didn't get beat up terribly in the bust, they could be buying because rates are so low. So you could have a couple year bounce in housing, not back to these levels, but if you go down 30 or 40%, you could get half of that back. But then by say 2029, you're moving towards double digit in interest rates, certainly double digit inflation and double digit interest rates. Mm-hmm. Mortgage rates could by the early 2030s be up into the 15% plus range. How we know what that does to a mortgage payment. So I think for those people that think housing is an inflation hedge, you really better understand that for most people, they're buying buying with a mortgage, and they're buying what they can afford with a mortgage, monthly payment. If rates can go from where they are now to triple or quadruple what they are, it's going to limit how many people are buying houses. Mm-hmm. And there's, you got the baby boomers are moving more and more to a point where they're going to be out of housing. They're either dying or moving into assisted living or what have you. I think the demographics, as well as my picture on inflation and interest rates, would argue that housing is not going to be a good investment in the next cycle. And from here, even because you got the bust. Mm-hmm.
David, you and I have talked before about this idea of kind of your targets on the general equity markets. Like, let's say, for example, taking the precious metals, the GDX, GDXJ, things like that. Do you try to focus on like an ETF like that in order to play these themes because of the, inherent risk in picking individual stocks?
Well, as a macro strategist, I don't do individual stocks, so I only use, I'm walking on a line because I use the GDX, GDXJ, SIL, and SILJ as proxies for the miners in general, both gold and silver. So I'm not really trying to analyze SIL or SILJ or GDX, mm-hmm. GXJ. I'm really just using it as a proxy to say, in general, this is where I think the miners will go. So I put targets out there for them. But, a macro strategist doesn't do individual stocks. So it's not meant to be a recommendation. It's really just like I, provide a target for oil. Yeah. I provide a target for the miners. I provide a target for the metals. But ETFs are the easiest way to do it in kind of a group industry fashion.
Yeah. David, is there anything else that you'd like to leave our listeners to think about before we kind of conclude today's discussion?
Yeah, just probably just to reiterate that, you know, my most contrary up until probably this week, you know, the people were most focused on the metals and how bad they were getting hit. And I wasn't expecting them to go quite as low as they did. But I think we've turned there. But the probably the most contrary thing now that the metals look like they may have finally turned up is the bonds. And I would just say, you know, we'll know, I think, in the next week or two, if I'm right, that, you know, we're making a top, putting a top in, and it's almost a 3-year top, two and three quarter year top in bonds. Mm-hmm. I mean, in interest rates and bottom in bonds. So it's a big, if I'm right, it's a big bottom in bonds. And I'm, you know, I think that's part of the bullish story for equities and for metals, is that bonds are going to begin finally turning up, rates turning down. And I would just say, keep an eye on that in the next week or two, because I think it's that close. Mm-hmm.
Excellent, David. Well, as always, I really appreciate your time and walking us through your thesis here, your macro outlook. Of course, for anybody that wants to read more from you and see all the interviews that you do, that you post, all available at Dave H. Contrarian on X. And you also write a letter, a private letter as well, right?
Yeah, I've got a quarterly macro letter that I put out. My last one just came out a couple of weeks ago. So it goes out the second week, typically the second week of each quarter. And it's by subscription. So if people have an interest, you know, I do a lot for free on X. You know, I'm on there pretty much every day giving my views. So, but for those that want more, there is the quarterly letter. It's by subscription, so it's, you know, comes with a cost. If they send me a direct message, you know, via chat, I can provide them the details on that if they're interested.
Perfect. David, thank you so much for your time today.
Okay, thanks, Tom.